So this is Narada Muni continuing to instruct Maharaj Yudhisthira. And this morning he says, in this world there are five elements, namely earth, water, fire, air, and ether. But the body is not a reflection of them, nor a combination or transformation of them, because the body and its ingredients are neither distinct nor amalgamated. All such theories are insubstantial. So what Srila Prabhupada does is he takes his transcendental magnifying glass and he holds it up to the verse in the light of the previous acharyas and by dint of his own unprecedented realizations, spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. And he brings out of the verse what we don't see. He doesn't speculate. He doesn't make up anything, but he simply brings out what we can't see. It's called Shastra Chakshusha. So here's his purport. What Narada Muni is only hinting at in the verse, which we can't quite divine, Prabhupada makes very clear in the purport. Thank God. Purport. A forest is certainly a transformation of the earth. But one tree does not depend on another tree. If one is cut down, this does not mean that the others are cut down. Therefore, the forest is neither a combination nor a transformation of the trees. And then Prabhupada says, the best explanation is given by Krishna himself. It's almost like, you know, he's saying what I said. You got that? And then he says, the best explanation is given by Krishna himself. Famous Gita verses, Maya tatamidam sarvam jagadavyaktamurtina matstani sarvabhutani nachaham teshvavastitaha. Quote, by me in my unmanifest form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. Gita 9.4. Actually, it's 9.3. That's a goof. Oh, no, excuse me. I goofed. It is 9.4. Sorry. Everything is an expansion of Krishna's energy. As it is said, Parasya Shaktir Vibhidhaiva Shruyate. The Lord has multi-energies, which are expressed in different ways. The energies are existing, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead also exists simultaneously. Because everything is his energy, he is simultaneously one with everything and different from everything. Thus, our speculative theories that Atma, the living force, is a combination of matter, that matter is a transformation of the soul, or that the body is part of the soul, are all insubstantial. So Prabhupada is sort of spelling out a little more of what the verse says. Insubstantial, read it as incomplete. It's not that it's wrong, it's just that it's incomplete. Since all the Lord's energies are simultaneously existing, one must understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But although he is everything, he is not present in everything. The Lord must be worshipped in his original form as Krishna. He can also present himself in any one of his various expanded energies. So as you hear these sentences, you know, juxtaposed, it's very paradoxical, you know. And what is a paradox? A paradox is only an apparent contradiction. It's not a real contradiction. There's no real conflict. Everything is adjusted in Krishna. But it's an apparent contradiction because we dwell in dualities. We dwell in, you know, in a make-believe world that's separate from our source. It's called the material world, right? So this is why the divine always, you know, appears to be paradoxical. Like Isa Upanishad, Tadejati Tanayajati, the Supreme Lord walks and does not walk. Tadure Tadvantike, he is far away, but he's very near as well. Tadantarasya Saravasya, he's within everything, but he's outside of everything. Huh? Tadu Sarvasyasya Bhayataha. Yeah, So I'll just keep reading. When we worship the deity of the Lord in the temple, the deity appears to be stone or wood. Now, because the Supreme Lord does not have a material body, he is not stone or wood, yet stone and wood are not different from him. Thus, by worshipping stone or wood, we get no result, but when the stone and wood are represented in the Lord's original form, by worshipping the deity, we get the desired result. This is supported by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy, Achintya Bheda Bheda, which explains how the Lord can present himself everywhere and anywhere in a form of his energy to accept service from the devotee. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto my spiritual master, who is forcing open my eyes, which are blinded by the darkness of ignorance, with the torchlight of knowledge. So, again, the verse is puzzling, and Srila Prabhupada, you know, again, all such theories are insubstantial. I'll read the verse again. In this world, there are five elements, namely earth, water, fire, air, and ether, but the body is not a reflection of them, nor a combination or transformation of them, because the body and its ingredients are neither distinct nor amalgamated. All such theories are insubstantial. So in light of Prabhupada's purport, what we're hearing in the verse is that if we try to understand these things just cut off from their source, we can't quite understand it. You know, nothing quite makes sense when we just look at it, you know, separate from the source. This is why the whole world is basically mad, because everybody's looking at the world, you know, separate, as though it didn't have any source. You know, there's no, and that's demoniac. Asatyanga pratishtang te jagadahuranishvaram aparasparasambhutam kimanyat kama haitukam. They say that this world is unreal. They say, who is they? Pavritting cha na vritting cha jana na vidurasara na shochang na pichacharo na satyang te shividyate. Those who are demoniac, Krishna says in the 16th chapter, do not know what is to be done nor what is not to be done. Neither cleanliness nor proper behavior nor truthfulness is found in them. Therefore, they say that this world is unreal. It is has no cause, and it is produced, has no other cause than lust. So, a very convenient philosophy if you want to see everything as, you know, paraphernalia for your sense gratification, right? But ultimately, nothing makes any, as you say in Britain, any bloody sense, right? It doesn't make any sense. Everything is contradictory, bewildering. Therefore, the summit of material philosophy we came to in the 20th century, it was called existentialism. And when Srila Prabhupada was presented with all these different philosophies, we know it, there's a book now, you know, Dialectical Spiritualism. So what does he say? And Shyamasundara would say, Shart and Kambu, they just say, you know, it doesn't matter what you do, everything is absurd, so just be brave and do it bravely. So Prabhupada said, this is insect philosophy. This is like the moths very bravely fly into a fire. Therefore, this is insect philosophy, you know. So, and it's the best you can do when you try to ascend, you know, on your own up to the truth, which is absurd. You know, we're very tiny, but we're very proud. Like in 1978, I was serving in New Dwarka as the indexer for Prabhupada's books. So I remember walking by a newspaper, big headline. Scientists are no longer sure why the sun shines. As though they were ever sure, right? I mean, you can never be sure, as Prabhupada points out in Isa Upanishad, about anything, because there's always some, you know, some case you haven't considered, right? And the example, if you want to find out who your father is, you have to ask your mother, ultimately. Although, see how these analogies are even tough these days, right? The mother might not even know. Or even, You know, like Prabhupada told that story of Satyakam. Satyakam went to Gautama Muni and said, can I be your disciple? And Gautama Muni says, well, are you Brahmin? And the boy was very honest. And so he said, I don't know. Well, go ask your mother. So he asked his mother, and the mother frankly said, well, I've known so many men, I can't tell you, you know, who your father is. You know. So Satyakam goes back to Gautama and tells him, I don't know who my... That's good. You are Brahman. You're telling the truth. You're truthful. So we can never know on our own what is what. So all such theories are insubstantial. They're incomplete. You know, on the one hand, everything looks very different, right, and contradictory. Like, literally, before I read Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, I was developing these psychosomatic symptoms that somebody was strangling me because I felt so oppressed by all the contradictions of the world. Everything was contradictory. You know, there was as many reasons to do something as not to do something. And even Arjuna offers this as one of his reasons why he shouldn't fight. Where does that go? This final reason, he said he doesn't want to fight. This is in the second chapter. All of them are in the first chapter except this last one. Nor do we know which is better, conquering them or being conquered by them. The sons of Dhritarashtra, whom if we killed we should not care to live, are now standing before us on this battlefield. Damned if I do, damned if I don't. And that's true as long as I'm making myself the center of the calculation. Damned if I do, damned if I don't. So the only way out of it is we have to get to know our beloved source. We have to get to know where everything's coming from. And then, you know, when we understand what our duty is and what life's all about and how everything in this world is not simply, you know, prey for my predatorial tendency to exploit and enjoy and control, but everything's actually paraphernalia for Jagat. It's to be offered to Krishna. This is such a relief. Oh, my God. So as soon as I read Prabhupada's Gita, and this was the, you know, back in the day, it was just the Macmillan purple butchered, you know, first try at a Gita with a black Vishnu silhouette on the cover with padded with all kinds of praises by the likes of Denise Levertov and Allen Ginsberg and Thomas Merton, because Macmillan was so afraid it wouldn't sell. So they had to get all these counterculture luminaries to say it's okay, you know, buy this book. But when I read even that hacked, butchered Gita, it was such a relief. Ah. And I actually felt, did you ever go to a chiropractor and then finally he cracks your back in the right way and there's a release, you know? So I felt it was a release. I no longer felt like somebody was strangling me, you know? Ah. I could, you know, breathe again. So let's go to there's passages in the Gita which specifically focus on Achintya-bheda Bheda-tattva. Any Gita lawyers in the house, do you know where these... Hint, Prabhupada already cited one of the verses. Yes. Which, do you know which? Yeah, the first one that Prabhupada cited, that's the next one. Mayata Tamidam Sarvam is the one he quoted. So if you look at Bhagavad Gita, the most confidential knowledge, you know, first there's a lot of focus on action, then it's devotion, and then it's gyan. I mean, it's all about devotion, but Krishna has different angles, the way he's preaching to karmis, gyanis, yogis, because that's where we're coming from, basically. He's reaching out to all different audiences. So right in the middle six chapters, in the middle of the middle six chapters, in the ninth chapter, it's practically the mathematical center of the whole Gita. You find chapter 9, texts 4 through 10. You really get a nice sense from Krishna of how he's inconceivably and simultaneously one with and yet distinct from his energies. So I'm going to read these verses, and I remember a few comments, because the late, great Purnachandra Maharaj, he did this beautiful Gitamrita, you know, with, he's reading Vishwanath's commentary, he's weaving, you know, he's taking Prabhupada's Gita, and then he's giving Vishwanath's comments with this background music, this dramatic background music. So I remember a few of those comments. But anyway, 9:4-10. And these are the verses that freed me, yes, from my madness. Okay, so here it is. This is the one Prabhupada quoted. By me and my unmanifested form, Jagat Avyakta Murti. We have beautiful Murtis here. They're Vyakta, they're manifest. But the Avyakta Murti is Krishna. He's in every atom, he's in our hearts. So he says, by me and my unmanifested form, the entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me. And then it gets really tricky, but I am not in them. And then it gets even trickier, the next verse. He says, and yet everything that is created does not rest in me. He kind of does a 180. And then he says, behold my mystic opulence. Although I am the maintainer of all living entities, and although I am everywhere, I am not a part of this cosmic manifestation. For myself is the very source of creation. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that when Arjuna hears that, he says to Krishna, oh, you've contradicted yourself, Krishna. Are you part of it or not? You know, what's the... And then Vishwanath says, Krishna laughs and says, oh, that's my mystic opulence. Let me give you an example, Arjuna. And then the next verse, this is the example that Krishna gives Arjuna to try to understand this, you know. Understand that as the mighty wind blowing everywhere rests always in the sky, all created beings rest in me. So there's the sky, or sometimes it's called ether or space. That's the subtlest gross element. Contains air or wind. And so Krishna says, understand that as the mighty wind blowing everywhere rests always in the sky, all created beings rest in me. So then Vishwanath says, Arjuna says, whoa, you said it's inconceivable, it's your mystic opulence, but now you've given me an example that I understand this. Yeah, there's the space, and then within the space is air or wind. So how is it inconceivable? How is it mystic anymore? And then Vishwanath says, Krishna says, ah, because I've just given you an example. Actually, sky and wind, they're inert elements. They're not conscious. But I am conscious and you are conscious. And it's inconceivable when there's a relationship. Say you have a boss and his workers. And the boss becomes dependent on the workers, and the workers become dependent on the boss. So they get attached. But I'm not attached. I'm aloof. So that's inconceivable. How when you're dealing with conscious living beings, there's a simultaneous involvement but non-involvement. Krishna is all-pervading, but he's aloof. Okay, so then he goes on. It gets better here. O son of Kunti, at the end of the millennium, all material manifestations enter my nature. And at the beginning of another millennium, by my potency, I create them again. The whole cosmic order is under me. Under my will, it is automatically manifest, again and again. And under my will, it is annihilated, automatically. Parasya shaktir vibhidhaiva shruyate. Just by determining or desiring, it's there. You know, we want to do something, and boy, is it hard. Anything we do, we try, we got to mix. You know, Krishna says in the Gita, there's five factors of action, the place, the performer, the endeavor, the senses, and ultimately, God disposes, the super soul, right? Even if we think we got all our ducks lined up and everything's in the right, sometimes it doesn't work, right? So we're limited by what is due us. Then Krishna says, O Dhananjaya, all this work cannot bind me. You know, Krishna's so involved with it. It's coming from him. He's present in every atom. But he said, I'm not affected. It doesn't bind me. I am ever detached. from all these material activities, seated as though neutral. And Prabhupada gives the example of the high court judge, like Krishna's in our hearts. So as super soul, Antaryami, when we're just absorbed trying to exploit his material energy, he's just the judge. And he's impartially awarding us, you know, apparent good, apparent bad, according to what we do, you know. But then when we turn toward him, he takes personal interest in us. He's not interested in our little dramas here in the material world. He's not interested in that. But then when we, by the grace of Guru and him, we turn toward him, then, yayatamang prapadyande, come on. Or Prabhupada even says, Krishna, you take one step toward him, he takes 10 toward you. So then it's a whole different ball game, as we say. You know. Okay, and then summing up the section of how Krishna is one with and different from his energies. This material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, producing all moving and non-moving beings. Under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. Okay, so from here I wanted to transition into something that I'll give you a little sample of what's going on with the Founder Acharya seminar that I'm taking around. There's one slide where we talk about, Prabhupada says, you have to find unity in diversity. And this is connected with the oneness of it all and the difference of it all. You know, because that's the nature of reality. Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Maharaj called it reality the beautiful. You know, there's a oneness to it all and a difference to it all. Everything's one in the sense that everything comes from Krishna. But if things are too much one, if things are too much the same, what do we say? It's so boring. And if everything's too different, what do we say? It's too chaotic, right? So when we really tune in to Krishna's reality as it is, we appreciate the oneness of it all coming from Krishna, but the difference of it all, how Krishna likes variety. But only Krishna, who is the infinite Supreme Lord, has this infinite capacity to relate to all of his energies. You know, we're tiny. Even in the liberated state, even in the Goloka place, it's not that everybody necessarily relates to everybody. And I'll give you an example. In this lesson we teach in the Founder Acharya seminar, there's one lesson we teach, it's called, to love is to cooperate. Right? That's arguably Prabhupada's farewell request to everyone in his ISKCON. Your love for me will be shown by how you cooperate. Your love for me will be tested by how you cooperate when I'm gone, physically gone. So we have this mandate to cooperate. And so that's kind of the thesis. So then we do a little dialectic, because the antithesis of that is another thing Prabhupada said to a disciple of his, or a leader of his, and the leader was complaining that these devotees are always fighting, and it's because they're impersonalists. You know, they're so insensitive. And so Prabhupada could have granted him his point that, yeah, I know, you know, they're, what can you do? They're neophyte, and neophyte means neo-fight. But he knew that his leader, disciple, needed to hear something. So he said, no, it's not that they're impersonalists. It's because they're persons that there's differences. It's because they're persons. Don't expect that even in the Krishna consciousness movement, there's going to be utopia. Prabhupada used the U word. Utopia. Utopia literally means, Sir Thomas More wrote a book called Utopia in 15-something. And it was this mythical place, you know, where there's a perfect economic system, social system, educational system, political system. And guess what? It doesn't exist in the material world. I mean, if we do Krishna's system, the Daivavarnashram system, then we can approach that, you know. So Prabhupada's making the point. And then to drive home his point to his leader disciple, he said, even in the spiritual world, if, you know, there's differences, and or there's some faults. And he's saying, oh, one time Krishna was so, infatuated with Radharani, that he began to milk a bull instead of a cow. He was so, you know, struck by love potion 108, you know. And then he said, and the gopis, sometimes they get so smitten by Krishna that they put their dresses on the wrong way, and they put, you know, that in the mascara the wrong way, and it looks like little kids are trying to dress themselves because they're so dingy, you know, with Krishna praying. And then what else does he say? Well, think of it too. We have this one slide in the seminar where Krishna and Balaram are in Akrura's chariot, and Akrura's trying to take them from Vrindavan to Mathura. And then you have the original, we have this phenomenon in America called the Occupy movement, and they're getting ready to do a number again at the Democratic Convention. It's coming up. It's a presidential race in America. So you see the original occupiers are the gopis, because the gopis are occupying the space in front of Akrura's horses and saying, no way, you're not taking Krishna and Balaram from Vrindavan. Jai. Sri Sri Radha Gokula Nanda Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Gornitai. Ki Jai. So here are Mukta Purushas, liberated souls, pure devotees of the Lord, locked in mortal, it looks like mortal conflict. But they're perfectly playing their parts. And Prabhupada says in this letter to his disciple, it's not material conflict, difference, it's not material envy. He says, you know, one gopi will see another gopi do something nice for Krishna, and then the gopi will think, oh, she's done so nicely for Krishna. And Prabhupada said, that's envy. But there's no malice. With malice toward none, as our Abraham Lincoln said in America, with malice toward none. You know, material envy means I want to cut that person down, you know. But spiritual envy is, oh, I'm jealous. I'm going to do something better for Krishna. So there's this ever-increasing, you know, competition to please Krishna. That's the nature of the spiritual energy. It's ever-increasing. And here everything is ever, you know, dissipating. Okay. So thesis, cooperate, antithesis, but don't expect utopia. And then the next letter we bring up in the seminar is a letter to another leader, and he was telling this leader, we have to find our unity amid our diversity. And how do we do that? Prabhupada says, in the material world, there's so much diversity, but there's no unity because there's no common center. So the way we're going to find our unity in diversity is we all are really trying to please Krishna. No hidden agendas, no pretense, no fake, anya bilashito shunyam, no other desires. And that's a journey to get there, but that's the target. So the way this Krishna consciousness movement is going to survive and thrive, Srila Prabhupada was telling this leader, is if we find our unity, Krishna, our common center, amid our diversity. And then he said, Prabhupada went so far as to say, therefore I am asking all our leaders to come together in Mayapur every year to discuss how we can have unity in diversity. That's the overarching theme. It's supposed to be the overarching theme of our international, you know, yearly annual leadership gathering. So that's big. That's huge. Okay, what else do I have? Yeah, so not only in Mayapur, but here, everywhere, you know. This is the age of quarrel. This is the age of non-cooperation. This is the age of my way or the highway. This is the age of conflict. Conflict happens. Therefore, a growth industry is conflict resolution, right? But we're here to practice surrender to Krishna, cooperating to do that. I asked Ambarish Prabhu, the main donor for the Temple of the Vedic Planetarium Project, the Adbhuta Mandir, and I said, Ambarish Prabhu, what's your biggest challenge in trying to marshal the resources and the, you know, well, Sureshwara, he says in his Detroit accent, It's cooperation, Sureshwar. It's so difficult to get people to cooperate because everybody's got their own little dramas and their own little agendas. And you know. So for the sake of Lord Chaitanya is asking us to cooperate to build this, you know, wonder of the world. But not just that, right here, you know, right in Bhaktivedanta Manor or wherever people are living, the challenge in Kali Yuga is to cooperate. And that means we have to become absorbed in Krishna's drama and forget our own soap operas. You know, forget it. It's that's why we keep coming back to this place, to act out our soap operas, our God projects. You know, didn't work before, but I'm determined this time I'm going to control and enjoy if it kills me, and it does. So we come back again and again and again. Bhutta gramaksa evayam bhutva bhutva praliyate. Again and again, this host of beings is active. And again the night falls, O Partha, and they are helplessly dissolved. So that plays out in the macrocosm, you know, and the microcosm. So we just have to keep our ear to the ground of our Founder Acharya's instructions and his matchless gifts, accept them with gratitude, learn our lessons, get out of our, you know, Atmavan Manyate Jagat, our tiny little boxes. And it's so much, I can tell you from, you know, I can tell you from my own life that it's, life is so much more interesting. You know, even if that's what you're interested in, just having an interesting life. Now that I'm older now, so there's nothing left for me to do but try to really, take Krishna for his word. You know, okay, he says he's going to protect me, he's surrendered unto me, and just do my work, you know. So, okay, let's see what this is all about. Okay. So it's getting a little late. And what happens? At 8:30 we stop everything, right? And then breakfast is at 9? 8:30, okay. So I'll read the verse again. If you have any questions or comments, please raise your hand. In this world there are five elements, namely earth, water, fire, air, and ether, but the body is not a reflection of them, nor a combination or a transformation of them. In other words, merely. Because the body and its ingredients are neither distinct nor amalgamated, it's neither separate from Krishna, nor one with, is it a chintya beta thing going on that makes it all complete? All such theories are insubstantial. They're incomplete. Questions, comments?